Order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Public Safety Subcommittee for Monday, May 2nd, 2005. This is a public hearing on House Bill 5054, the Oregon Office of Homeland Security. Before we go further with our agenda, I would like to first apologize to members of the public who may not have received a clear message about our schedule of activities this afternoon. We have been very fortunate, members of the committee, to be able to tour this facility, and as a part of doing that, also welcome home a number of our guardsmen and women who have been at Guantanamo Bay. And it is an honor to be in their presence and to have the opportunity to thank them for their service to Oregonians, but also their service to the nation. So again, please accept our apology for the delay in getting started with our more formal agenda, but it was very important to honor these men and women and thank them for their service on behalf of all of us. With that said, our agenda includes a several presentations, and I'd like to call up Craig Campbell from the Governor's Office, who will provide a brief overview, and then he will be followed by Doug Wilson from the Legislative Fiscal Office and Linda Gilbert from the Budget and Management Division with some additional information about the details in the budget. Good afternoon, Mr. Campbell, and thank you very much for joining us and for being a part of the tour.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm the Governor's Senior Policy Advisor and the State Homeland Security Advisor. And I wanted to begin by thanking you for taking the time out of your schedule to go and speak to the members of the 1186th. Having recently been returned for a year of absence, it's very nice for them to have an opportunity to hear thanks from their elected leaders here in the state. So thank you very much for taking the time to do that. I'm going to keep my comments fairly brief. Most of the information that you're going to need in detail will be provided by other people, but I did want to briefly share with you the vision that the governor had in creating the Office of Homeland Security, which is reflected both in the budget you have before you and also the bill that is had its first hearing last week that would create the Department of Homeland Security. Unlike other states, Oregon is looking at an approach that combines all of a core set of elements that include military, law enforcement, fire, and civilian support through emergency management to respond not only to the threats that the state may have via terrorism, but also in the all-hazards approach, which would reflect natural and man-made disasters that can occur as well. The Department of Homeland Security is designed to be a core of those critical elements that must be ready to work together in the event of any emergency and can also work to prevent and detect those things that might result in harm to the public. They will have other responsibilities as well that include coordinating efforts from a number of other state agencies that have responsibilities that touch on and are in fact integral to our response to both terrorist threats and to natural disasters and man-made disasters. And they will need to do that through a cooperative spirit that the department creates, a kind of a core that they can operate from. Our goal was not to include everything in one department because if you make the department too large, it tends to add on inefficiencies. So this is a fairly small, efficient group of individuals who know what they're doing, and we put together a series of entities that have already been doing the jobs that they're doing, and we basically transferred them over wholesale under the umbrella of the Office of Homeland Security. In addition, this particular department will be responsible for implementing much of what we are receiving by way of guidance and direction from the federal partners through the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, who both provides us with grant money and also requires us to meet certain requirements in association with the various presidential Homeland Security directives that have come down. which includes such things as making sure that we have a series of plans in place, and also requires that all first responders in the state are prepared to follow a national incident management system response to any emergency that may come up. Of course, that was derived from our local fire services that have been using that for a number of years, and the forestry service. But other partners have not had that experience, and it is our responsibility to make sure that training is made available to them. I can answer any particular questions about the vision behind the department. However, there are some folks who have been dealing with the nitty-gritty who will be coming and testifying to you today, and will have much more information. So I am available to you if you have any questions. Otherwise, I'll let those folks speak.
Comments or questions for Mr. Campbell? Representative Hansen. Well, Mr. Campbell, thank you again for your presence and your participation this afternoon. We look forward to continuing the conversation with you about these issues.
Indeed, and if there is anything that myself or the governor's office can do to assist you in your endeavors, please feel free to let us know. We'd be happy to provide you with whatever information you can, we can.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wilson, and then Linda Gilbert. Ms. Gilbert, if you would come forward. And Director Stillwell, if you would like to join us, and Mr. Murphy, Ken Murphy.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, real briefly, in front of you are a number of handouts. The first one is a draft amendment. I don't know if it was. I'm not sure when this bill is scheduled. Right on the top of my head, but this is the bill that creates the new Office of Homeland Security, and this is at the House Judiciary right now. My typical memo is also there, as well as the BAM budget management handout. Going to my memo real briefly, this is a new agency, so there are no budget notes, e-board actions, or audit findings, because they don't exist at least statutorily at this time. If you take a turn to the second page, just to show some spending trends or divisions here, the second page does show some significant growth between 0103 and 0305, mainly due to increasing amount of federal grants, including Homeland Security grants. You can expect the 0507 governor's budget to increase also, as there is likely more federal money coming in than was expected 6 or more months ago, that when the governor's budget was put together. I believe there's a technical adjustment most likely coming on before the end of session regarding that. At the bottom of page 2, just really to show you the functions of this agency, is much more than homeland security in nature. The Office of Emergency Management also is the mechanism for the 911 and provides a number of grants out to local 911 systems across the state that makes up over a quarter of their budget. CSEP, which is the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, makes up a little less than 20%. Those are funds that most of which go directly over to the Umatilla County area for that stockpile facility there. I'm sure they'll talk a little bit more about that. And also the Criminal Justice Services Commission or Division there represents 38% of the spending, and almost entirely goes to either other state agencies or to the bulk of the local government. So this is an agency that provides grants and other financial assistance on the most part to other agencies across the state, most of which are local. On the next page, just some major policy and budget issues. Please keep in mind that this agency is proposed to be created in the governor's budget. House Bill 2101 or a similar bill must pass to continue the long-term existence of this agency. The new office is currently working under governor's executive order in terms of its current operations. I think Ms. Stillwell will go into a little bit of the history of that. The incremental cost of the new agency are roughly $700,000 general fund in this budget. All other functions are existing, either through the state fire marshal the Office of Emergency Management, or the Criminal Justice Services Commission, which is all of which are currently under statute components of the Oregon State Police. You have had the ongoing discussions on number three, questions discussions about sort of the proper structure. Craig just talked about that, and I'm sure there'll be some discussion on that. An upcoming issue that may affect Oregon that I think Ms. Merlot will talk about is sort of the changing distribution formulas that are the federal government is currently talking about for Homeland Security grants. There looks like there's discussions underway to place greater emphasis on those areas at most risk, for much of which are urban areas like New York City, Washington, D.C., larger urban areas, which will likely affect the funding for Oregon if that goes through Congress the way the discussions are underway. And finally, as a note that I think I have found a solution for with discussions with the agency and BAM and others, in the past, the state, Oregon State Police have fronted general fund resources for payments to local fire agencies as they're called out to fight forest fires and structural fires during the fire season. In the past, they have been fronted until the E-Board provides a general fund for that. We will have to find a solution to that because this agency does not have a great deal of general fund. And if it's in the second year of the fire season or the biennium of the fire season, they will likely not have enough general fund to do that, sort of borrowing up front. So we will have to find another solution for that. I think, Madam Chair, I'll close with that.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Wilson? Ms. Wilson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Linda Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, working from this display. On the second page, we see that today we're dealing with a $229 million budget, which is about just under 10% of the total public safety program area. With respect to total funds, with respect to general fund and lottery, however, it is 0.2%, 0.2% of the total general and lottery fund expenditure for the public safety program area, and that is the $3.4 million. The next page, page 3, deals with the fund types that are involved. General fund on the top is 1.5% of this budget at $3.4 million. Other funds are around $84 million. The bulk of it, certainly 62% of it, is federal funds, the combination of non-limited and limited expenditure for federal funds. Sources of revenue for other funds include the fire insurance premium tax, petroleum load fees, hazardous substance possession fees, 911 phone excise tax, there are other license and permit fees. Federal funds come from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Homeland Security grants, as Mr. Wilson has discussed, burn grants, violent offender incarceration proof and sentencing grants, and local law enforcement grants. I'm going to skip page 4 because my colleague, Mr. Wilson, did a much better job of laying out that particular pie chart by program area, and move to page 5. Page 5 shows the budget by budget category. Personal services at $16.8 million is 7% of the budget. Services and supplies is under 7% of the budget. Capital outlay is very small at 0.6% of the budget, and the bulk of it is special payments, $195.6 million, most of which goes out in grants or aid. The following page is a brief history. It is so brief that there is no history at all. In fact, it lists the governor's 507 budget. The agency has a display, I think it's on page 10, of their presentation, which puts together a history showing some of the elements, most of the elements and most of the dollars that compose the Homeland Security Office. On page 7, we have the assumptions that went into the budget. The first, of course, is the passage of Canadian legislation as discussed at House Bill 2101, which is in House Judiciary now, its first hearing last Thursday, the 28th, and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so you'll have an opportunity to see it. The components, of course, are emergency management, the state fire marshal, criminal justice services division. These are transferred whole from the state police. And there will also be a contractual relationship with the Office of Public Safety and Security sworn officers, also part of the state police. Finally, as you saw today in your tour, military participation and representation is a part of this as well. The next page shows the policy package. It is the policy package that provided enhancements to turn this from an office into an agency. Five positions were added for leadership and administrative support, and these are supported by a combination, mostly general funds, but there's some other federal funds supporting these positions as well. There are four positions supported entirely by other funds from the state fire marshal. One position is supported by federal funds, that's in emergency management for the Canada Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Plan, or CSEP. And finally, the contract that we mentioned before for the public safety and security sworn staff covers another five.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Gilbert, the five new positions for leadership, are those the same that Mr. Wilson referenced in bullet point two? Is that part of the $700,000, including the financial staff?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, that's correct.
Could you elaborate just a little bit on the financial staff? You say five new positions for leadership and administrative support, but financial staff, administrative support.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, off the top of my head. One of the positions is immediately to my right, and that would be the director. There's a budget director. There are two accounting positions. One is payroll. That kind of staff.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Certainly.
Were there positions in OEM before? I mean, one position supported by federal funds in OEM, but are any of the five new positions OEM? I mean, are they all?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, these are positions that will support the entire agency. The new positions are, but there are existing positions both in state fire marshal and in OEM that have done some of these functions.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
Thank you. So the total is 128 positions, 127 full-time equivalent. The next page lists some of the cost drivers to take into account in developing a budget for Homeland Security. Certainly the Federal Department of Homeland Security policies with respect to the state fire marshal, there are structure fires, hazardous materials, their presence and cleanup. For emergency management, there's natural disasters and policies of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And telephony technology. I learned telephony this for this session, and this is my first opportunity to say it out loud, and I'm quite pleased about that. And this has to do with keeping up with, in fact, the technology having to do with communications. For instance, voice over internet will be the next one coming that will need some sort of an identification for 911 purposes. Another driver, of course, is chemical munitions incineration. Finally, federal public safety grant availability. The more grants to give out, the more work to keep track of them. On the next page, we have one fee issue. The state fire marshal has had an administrative fee increase for two fees during the during this biennium, and the committee will have an opportunity tomorrow when House Bill 1555 is introduced to consider the ratification of those fees to carry them on. I've listed several kinds of technical adjustments. We can go over that quickly, and we'll get the details on these at the work session. One will be to restore other funds and federal funds expenditure limitation for existing positions and for new positions that accidentally were overlooked. There will be a shift of general fund from services and supplies to personal services to cover corrected salary rates. Beginning balances for the state fire marshal's unit will need to be adjusted as we come to know more about the revenue collected in 0305. On the final page, we'll be needing to assign some general fund to criminal justice services division for required federal match. And that may come from services and supplies where we may find the fund shifting in another area to get it from. It would be reallocating Smart by Savings. Those were originally all assigned to state police, and now they're being allocated out to the divisions in state police as well as to Homeland Security. And finally, we'll reallocate personal services expenses among all fund types in order to reduce general fund demand for personal services. With that, my presentation is completed, and I am happy to take questions.
Comments or questions? Thank you very much. Director Stillwell.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Beverly Stillwell, and I'm the Director of the Oregon Office of Homeland Security. And I'm very pleased to be before you today to provide an overview of the agency. But at first, I'd like to take and provide just a bit of a historical perspective on Homeland Security in Oregon. Prior to the tragic events of 9/11, the majority of Homeland Security, as it's currently configured, was part of the Oregon State Police's Intergovernmental Services Bureau. After the events of 9/11, which happened under the former Governor Kit Haber's administration, he chose as his response to governmental restructuring as a sole elevation of emergency management to cabinet-level status as a standalone agency. This was accomplished via executive order that was signed on December the 21st of 2001. In the next legislative session, in the 03 session, House Bill 2250 was introduced that would have effected the necessary changes to elevate just emergency management to cabinet-level status. A new governor, Governor Kulongoski, had taken office, and the House Bill 2250 remained in committee as the new governor wanted to take a look to his idea as restructuring state government in response to Homeland Security. To that end, effective April 1st of 2003, emergency management returned as division status within the Intergovernmental Services Bureau of the State Police. Subsequently, on May 11th of 2004, Governor Kulongoski signed Executive Order 0405 that created the Oregon Office of Homeland Security as it now exists. And what this does is this incorporates Governor Kulongoski's vision for how Homeland Security could best be structured within a state environment. It includes elements that previously had been dedicated to the Oregon State Police and the Oregon Military Department. The governor did not choose either the State Police or the Military Department as being the lead for several reasons. One was he wanted to maintain the State Police's focus on their core mission. And secondly, the Military Department is incredibly stretched as they are focused on their huge role in fighting the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. The model that the governor chose as he looked across the United States was one that is very unique in its construct. It includes law enforcement, emergency management, the fire service, military department, and also Homeland Security funding. It provides an excellent foundation for Oregon's efforts to address Homeland Security. As you heard earlier, House Bill 2101, which would create the Oregon Homeland Security Department, is currently under deliberation in the 2005 legislature. And I believe that you have before you the most recent proposed draft changes to 2101 that better aligns 2101 with the vision of the governor's office. And I personally want to commend Superintendent Ricker and Adjutant General Byrne for their incredible support in being able to stand up the elements of the Office of Homeland Security. They, in their vision and their staff, have worked tirelessly in supporting the effort and being supportive of everything that we do, and so my commendations do go to them. I have included for your review a copy of both the executive orders that I referred to, the most recent one, that was signed by Governor Kulongoski and the previous one by Governor Kitzhaber for you to take a look at.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Stillwell, from my education, what's the authority or what's the time limit and for executive orders? And is there time, is it 90 days, 100, is it until superseded? And could you, just from my education, could you tell me?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, it is until rescinded. The mission of the Oregon Office of Homeland Security is to provide leadership for the protection of our citizens, to include their property and the environment, the economy, And this is done through prevention, preparedness, response, and recovery, the key foundation to emergency response. I have included for you review on page 9 a wire diagram of the agency as I move forward through each of the sections of the department. The Office of Homeland Security is comprised of 122 employees who perform the functions of the Director's Office and Administrative Support. This is asked for in the budget to include additional staffing for personnel, payroll, human resources. This is a function that's currently being performed by the Oregon State Police. There were not human resources or payroll or personnel individuals that were within any of the construct. There were a couple individuals that were paid for through the state fire marshal that were housed within the Oregon State Police and have worked within that construct since about 1993. So those functions didn't exist for the existing department. Oregon Emergency Management, purpose of OEM, is to manage and maintain our emergency services system for the state, for the planning and the preparing for our citizens, the administration of several important funding streams, one being the 911 system for emergency calls, and the other being the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, which is a federally funded program in support of emergency preparedness for the Umatilla Demilitarization Facility in Hermiston. OEM has 32 employees that house their traditional emergency management programs, and they have also taken on a tremendous workload with the increased requirements for homeland security through domestic preparedness planning, training, and exercising, not only for state agencies, for assisting local governments. Also included within the construct is the Criminal Justice Services Division. The purpose of the Criminal Justice Services Division is to administer federal grant funding to the state. And these dollars go to state, local, and nonprofit agencies to improve the effectiveness of the public safety system. It also includes criminal justice and drug abuse crime dollars that has been under the purview of the division for many years now and remains with the division. They also serve staff to the Governor's Drug and Violent Crime Advisory Board that develops a statewide strategy on a yearly basis to address drug abuse and violent crime in the state, and they are also staff to the Governor's Council on Domestic Violence. Also included is the Office of the State Fire Marshal, and the purpose of the office is to protect the citizens and their property from environmental and unintentional fires and hazardous materials releases.
We still have a question for you. Are we currently administering grants to nonprofit agencies?
Yes, we are.
Is there a list available to this committee so that we can get a sense of what that looks like and where these nonprofit agencies are located around the state?
Madam Chair, yes, we can get you that list. From my experience, a lot of the nonprofits are in support of domestic violence programs throughout the state, and I will have Director Merlot provide that list if it's not already contained within the appendix in the back.
The grants to nonprofits are not necessarily related then to all related to Homeland Security.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Are any of the grants directed to faith-based organizations?
Madam Chair, in the sense of domestic violence programs.
Yes. There are?
Yes.
We'd like to see that list as well.
Madam Chair, we will provide that. For the first time this year, a portion of the Homeland Security dollars can be used in support of nonprofit agencies to enhance their protection. Out of the Urban Area Security Initiative funds, a maximum of $100,000 is currently in the request for proposal status to be able to enhance security of a nonprofit facility that might be a target in Homeland Security. So that is the one time we were at Homeland Security. The remainder have been traditionally funded over the course of the last 10 years or so in support of domestic violence shelters and response.
Senator Devlin.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I didn't ask this question when you came by the other day. I'm trying to figure out how basically to phrase it. In terms of federal resources, I know that particularly for some programs, the state can retain up to 20%, and 80% goes to local first responders, largely. I have heard a concern expressed, and I don't know the details of the inner workings of how this would happen, but that there might be some grant programs where local governments could apply to the federal government for receipt of those grants, but where they could potentially be precluded or have to run those grants through the state office first. Has anybody approached you about this issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, as it relates to Homeland Security, there have been some recent fund streams that local government can apply for, but that they want to have the state administrative agency review the grant request to make sure that it's conforming to the state strategy for Homeland Security. It's not as though they can deny the request. It's just to keep it in concert and to have coordination. In the past, we've seen large grant streams to where the federal government will fund programs directly, and they're not part of a coordinated effort. And I think in the spirit of doing statewide needs assessments, of which local government participates in, the more that we have the full picture of the money that's going out and the resources that have been purchased, that's been the spirit of what they're having the state at least have some sort of a review over and a thumbs up, thumbs down recommendation to the federal government.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So, Ms. Stilwell, if I relate back to anyone, they haven't actually given me this concern in the last 60 days, but it was before that. They should not look at the State Department of Homeland Security necessarily as a barrier, but as someone that they could work with on these issues, and if their need, well, that you would be commenting on their need, not basically trying to preclude them from making their need evident to whoever the federal granting authority might be.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, absolutely. Our goal is to make sure that local government gets what they need to be able to protect their citizens. And what we have really seen through Homeland Security and a lot of the requirements that have been put upon us, which I will go into in a little bit, is the working together and the collaboration unlike we've ever seen in government before during my tenure. And I see us as someone to help facilitate what they need, not to be a hindrance to getting what they need. The next element within the Office of Homeland Security is the Office of Public Safety and Security. And this is where the role changes a bit from the divisions that I have previously spoken to. The purpose of the Office of Public Safety and Security is to perform active investigations of international and domestic terrorism. And what this office is five sworn positions who are members of the Oregon State Police and will remain members of the Oregon State Police. The Office of Homeland Security needs to have this function as part of its core mission, but in the spirit of not duplicating services, we are taking a piece that exists within the state police and have that part of our core management team so that we are sharing information about investigations that are going on and also communicating information. It helps with the governor's office in knowing about threats that currently are existing and also with the role that the Office of Homeland Security has. Within the Office of Public Safety and Security, they have the law enforcement liaison role, and they also work directly with and communicate with the FBI and the Oregon Department of Justice Criminal Intelligence Center on intelligence information and the fusion of that information, looking at potential threats and evaluating that information, forwarding it to local law enforcement, taking tips from local law enforcement, from citizens who have called local law enforcement with something that they have seen, and they fuse that information through their law enforcement channels, something that I cannot do as a civilian. and they also work with assessing critical infrastructure and the vulnerabilities to our critical infrastructure and our buffer zone protection program, which is looking at hardening some of our most vulnerable assets that we have in the state. And another role is the military support to civilian authorities, and that's where the military department has a very similar role to the Office of Public Safety and Security. They do not have any funding in the Office of Homeland Security's budget, but they have a reporting relationship to where they're part, again, of the leadership team, of the information sharing, of the planning and preparedness, because in the event that something happens in this state, we'll all be working together, law enforcement, military, and your traditional emergency management and fire service programs. To the wire diagram on page 9, in addition to what I've outlined, which would be the five boxes along the bottom, there's also to the left the Domestic Preparedness Steering Group, and this group meets weekly, and it's comprised of emergency management, state police, agriculture, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police Association, and public health and preparedness, DASC, risk and cybersecurity. Again, meeting weekly, discussing the issues, discussing planning and preparedness, the different efforts that are going on. One of our strong partners is public health preparedness, and we are linked in with the efforts of CDC and the hospital preparedness monies that are coming down through Department of Human Services. The box right below that with the Domestic Preparedness Working Group, it has a dual role of implementing directives that come down. It's a very diverse group of individuals that includes our 911 partners at the local level, Association of Oregon Counties, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, League of Oregon Cities, the Chiefs of Police, our state agencies, local fire, OSHA. Again, they take a look at the grant requests that come in for Homeland Security, make sure that they're in alignment not only with the state strategy, but with the efforts that they're doing within their state agencies and local governments. To the right, in the top box, is the Governor's Security Council. This is comprised of state agency heads who have a specific need to be involved in the Governor's Homeland Security agenda. It includes the Attorney General, State Police, DAS, Department of Environmental Quality, Agriculture, Governor's Office, Homeland Security. Right, the box below that, the Homeland Security Liaisons, this is contemplated in the rewrite that you have of House Bill 2101. And what this does is it illustrates how important some of our other state partners are in our mission and our direct link in having somebody from public health, agriculture, transportation, DEQ, administrative services as it relates to risk and cybersecurity, Department of Energy for our energy sector, and also consumer and business services building codes. And this is where we have a liaison from each one of the state agencies who work directly with the Office of Homeland Security in ensuring that we are planning and coordinating together and that we're not duplicating efforts and that we are developing a cohesive plan for the state.
Director Stillwell, in the case of the Homeland Security liaisons, these are not necessarily the agency directors. It can be a designee.
Madam Chair, that is correct. It's actually probably the technical person within each of those departments who would be working on planning and preparedness. It wouldn't be the agency heads. The agency heads are more involved within the Governor's Security Council. This is more of a technical working group, those who roll up their sleeves and put together the plans.
However, not all of the agencies in that box, in that second box, not all of those agency directors are represented on the Governor's Security Council.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Public health. Did I hear you reference public health as being on the Security Council?
Madam Chair, public health is included on the Governor's Security Council.
And agriculture.
Madam Chair, agriculture is also included.
Transportation.
Madam Chair, transportation is also included on that too.
Environmental quality?
Yes, they are.
administrative services and energy?
They are included. Energy and consumer and business services are most recently added, and they were recently added to the proposed legislation, House Bill 2101. So those are two new members that experience has shown us that they need to have a role within our day-to-day operations, but they, to this point, have not been included within the governor's Security Council.
But under House Bill 2101, they would be added to the Security Council.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2101 does not establish the governor's governor's Security Council. It establishes the Homeland Security liaisons that would report to the Office of Homeland Security. The Governor's Security Council has been an ad hoc group that has been developed to make sure that our agency heads are informed and apprised of Homeland Security efforts in Oregon.
Where is the link between the Governor's Security Council and or the Governor and the legislature, the appropriate legislative committees or leadership?
Madam Chair, that's something that we're looking at, is to reformulate or add a legislative advisory component into the policy and expand the Governor's Security Council, or form something that would include legislative input and guidance into Homeland Security efforts in Oregon.
Is the legislative component addressed in House Bill 2101?
Madam Chair, it is not.
Was thought given to adding a legislative component to that legislation?
Madam Chair, yes, it has been. We understand the importance of having legislative input into Homeland Security issues, and it is something that Craig Campbell and I have discussed in how best to do that, whether it's through an existing committee. We have not yet put that within the proposed legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mrs. Stilwell, I don't know if Mr. Campbell showed you that, but we passed on an article that the Chair had found from the National State Legislative Magazine that said that that was a key element, to have legislatures involved in some sort of oversight or review of Homeland Security Commission. So we would hope that you and Mr. Campbell and the Governor would consider that favorably and try to implement some role for us in your activities.
Chair Representative, absolutely, we truly understand the importance of legislative oversight, and we'll definitely put that into place.
Do we need, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I want to make a note to Mr. Wilson that we want to consider that in the budget meeting.
Mr. Wilson has made the note.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please continue. Moving on to page 10, very briefly, the revenue sources. I think it's been touched on earlier by Linda Gilbert and Doug Wilson, showing the funding trends for general fund, other fund, and federal funds within the department. In the governor's recommended budget is for a total of $229 million and 127 FTE. 122 of these FTE are transferred from the state police, and 5 are requested as part of the effort to implement the elements contained within the executive order that created the Office of Homeland Security. Currently, these functions are being accomplished through staffing at the state police, short of the position of director. And the following chart on page 11 just gives you a visual illustration of the different divisions within Homeland Security, the percentage of their budget that they have. The major accomplishments that the office has been able to achieve is looking at the tremendous amount of Homeland Security dollars that have gone out to state and local jurisdictions since 1999. Approximately $117 million have been awarded out. These awards are based on needs assessments, risk and vulnerability assessments, and these efforts are performed by staff within the Office of Emergency Management. I believe within the appendix section, and I know that Carmen Merlot, the Director of Criminal Justice Services Division, will go into it in greater detail as the funds reside within her division, but there's an appendix in the back It has sort of a laundry list of all the different grants that have been awarded. On to interoperable communications. The State Interoperability Executive Council was created by Governor's Executive Order in 2002, and that council is charged with improving interoperable public safety communications in Oregon. I've included for you a reference to the website, which contains a tremendous amount of information as to the accomplishments of the council. It's a 17-member body that represents state and local public safety organizations, including special districts, fire and law enforcement associations, 911 communications, and also the governor's public safety advisor. Chief Jeff Johnson from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue is the chair of the committee. Superintendent Ricker of the Oregon State Police is the vice chair. Chief Johnson will be providing comments to you in greater detail as to the accomplishments of the SIAC tomorrow during public testimony. But some of the major accomplishments that we're looking at is the development of guidance to local government on some short-term steps that they can do to achieve interoperability, and some standards and guidelines to ensure that there's consistent development of interoperable communication systems. Obviously, communications is something that's highly funded by Homeland Security dollars, and the link that we have with the SIAC cannot be underscored enough. I sit on the SIAC, and we ensure that the programs and the projects that we fund are supported by the efforts of the SIAC, and funding recommendations are made in accordance with that. Another element that it was...
Before you go on, there's a question from Representative Wisner.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think that's the next subject here. We're going to get into the wireless. I was going to ask because, Madam Chair and Directors, drawing a blank, Stillwell. Should know General Stillwell. The State Police last week talked to us about the wireless requirement and the Chair was made a note of the expense that's going to be involved. You're going to address... jumping ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't get ahead. Didn't see that was the next group, so maybe you can talk to us about that. There's a significant amount of money that's going to be involved in going to the wireless system.
Madam Chair, Representative Visnick, yes, it is. It's a tremendous amount of money. In acknowledgement of the rapidly aging and outdated communication systems that currently exist amongst the four key state agencies, that being the State Police, Department of Forestry, Department of Transportation, and Department of Corrections. It was developed the State Wireless Infrastructure Investment Group to take a look at how they could work together as state agencies, knowing that each state agency could not develop its own wireless system and replace it, but together that there was efficiencies that could be gained, and also the vision necessary amongst the group. And I'm pleased to say that a Homeland Security grant was just awarded to be able to fund the request for proposal to do the engineering study to look at the existing radio towers that are owned by the four key state agencies and how to enhance certain towers, certain buildings, to be able to create a single backbone system in the state based upon microwave. And it's also the goal of this project is to allow local governments to be able to dovetail in and ride on, so to speak, this backbone infrastructure in being able to resolve some of their interoperable communication issues also. As part of the public testimony tomorrow, knowing your great interest in this and mine also, there will be a brief presentation from either Don Fole or Steve Marks on the efforts of a SWIG and the price tag that's out there and what the timeline for completion is. But it's a critical project, and it's one that has an upwards of a $300 million price tag on it. But we're attempting to go about it in a way that all state agencies can benefit from a single development as opposed to duplicate developments, and that also local governments can be able to utilize the system in support of a statewide interoperable communication solution.
Let me ask a question here. I want to make sure that I understand how the federal dollars, the Homeland Security funding dollars, are being allocated. Are they being allocated according to a strategic plan that says we need this level of investment, for example, to create this amount of infrastructure? Again, are the investments in alignment with criteria directly related to a plan?
And Madam Chair, yes, it is. And that's part of the work of the State Interoperability Executive Council, was the development of grant guidelines when we went out for requests for proposals for the Homeland Security dollars in the state. There's also a member of the SIEC that sits on the Grant Review Committee to vet each one of the proposals that were presented for communications to make sure that they were in support of the strategic plan of the SIEC, that there was a need of the magnitude that was being requested from the requesting jurisdiction, and that it would be the appropriate thing to do to fund that investment. There were many investments that were made this last go-around of infrastructure improvements at the local level to allow them to be able to communicate more fully. So, yes, indeed, the investments are not made haphazard. They're made in concert with a strategy, with oversight from the SIEC.
What is the total amount of the investment required to meet the needs of the, I'm calling it a strategic plan? We have invested $117 million thus far since 1999. So what percentage of that is... how far short are we of meeting our need?
Okay, Madam Chair, of the $117 million, that's not just for communications infrastructure, so I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. A lot of that is for personal protective equipment and for equipment that has been given to our first responders at the local level. Not necessarily all of it's been communication. There has been a tremendous amount of upgrading of radios over the past few years, so yes, there has been. There hasn't been a price tag yet that's been put on how big is the problem. There's been a needs and inventory analysis that was performed of our public safety answering points and some of our key local jurisdictions, but I don't have a price tag for what it would be to make everyone whole, to make everything perfect. The strategic plan that we have at least is trying to focus efforts in a way that would achieve interoperability with short-term solutions that they can do, whether that's reprogramming for their tactical channels and the national channel to facilitate interoperability, but the ability to go out there and to mine the data, so to speak, as to what exists and what they need is a daunting task. They did a first attempt at it, which was a very admirable attempt, at least getting some recommendations of how to take the next steps forward. The main recommendation coming out of the needs and inventory analysis was the need of the state and federal government to develop a backbone communications infrastructure, and that's what our main first focus is the backbone infrastructure, and that's the one that has the approximate $350 million price tag on it. But also in support of local government, we are ensuring that they have a system that will be supportive of the FCC requirements and Project 25 standards with the smaller investments that we're making. Please continue. Another accomplishment that is not necessarily in this book, but I know that the committee is also interested in, is the selection of Oregon as being a participant in the top officials for exercise in the spring of 2007. We were selected along with Arizona and Guam to participate in this national level exercise, and Chief Seidel from Hillsborough Fire will be here tomorrow. He attended the Top Off 3 exercise that was recently held in Connecticut and New Jersey, along with our partners in Canada and the United Kingdom, to be able to share with the group the magnitude of this exercise and what that means to Oregonians. When you look at the amount of federal dollars that have come into the state for our first responders, this is a tremendous next step, kind of very much graduate-level work for our first responders in being able to test the system, test the plans, make sure that the mutual aid compacts are working, and just to take it the next step. And we're very proud to be selected. We're very scared to be selected, too. It's a huge task of over 10,000 people that participate in the planning. It's a 24-month planning process. And it's something that I wanted to share with the committee of being able to put into play the next step, which is very exciting. On to the federal future for Homeland Security. I'm on page 15. It was mentioned earlier that we're really anticipating some potential changes in the way that Homeland Security monies are distributed to the states. There's been a greater focus in on our highly urban areas, New York, Los Angeles, and there's currently both a House and a Senate bill within Congress to look at revamping the formula of how the money is distributed. So I just wanted to alert the committee to that. And perhaps to accommodate the growing Homeland Security funding, what we're really seeing in the state is a dramatic decrease in the amount of criminal justice funding that's going to especially our juvenile programs and our law enforcement programs. We're seeing large cuts in money that could be available to our narcotics task forces and for juvenile crime prevention, and I want to make sure that the committee is aware of that. In addition to fund shifting, there's a tremendous amount of requirements or presidential directives that are coming down that are attached to the Homeland Security dollars, and sometimes directives can be painful, and but sometimes pain's a good thing, and it really is getting people to work together, and it's taking us all to the next level. It's taxing out our ability to be able to be in compliance with it at the state level, but I really want to highlight the ability of the local government to comply with the numerous federal requirements that are coming down. It's really a tremendous burden on our local emergency managers and our local jurisdictions in being able to be in compliance with the requirements that the presidential directives are outlining. I've highlighted for you several in here that I think are most relevant to the work that we do. The first one being Presidential Directive 5, which calls for a national incident management system. There was an incident management system that was pioneered in the fire service years ago. This kind of takes it the next level and mandates that there is an incident management system across jurisdictional lines, which again is a good thing. Looks at unified command, looks at the complexities of the situations that we are involved in, knowing that there's not one person that can always be in charge, but sometimes it's a shared command. Presidential Directive 7 looks at our critical infrastructure and the key resources necessary to protect them. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan has been developed, and it will have a tremendous impact on the state and local jurisdiction in making sure that our critical infrastructure is protected. Homeland Security Presidential Directive 8 is very far-reaching and is in infancy in being developed by the federal government. What it's going to do is to make sure that we are as well prepared as we possibly can be across all levels of government, federal, state, and local. And it will be able to put into place assessment process, look at standards for response, a national training program, and adopting federal performance measurements that jurisdictions must be in compliance with. It is something that I am going to look at in developing an overarching performance measurement for the Office of Homeland Security is to look at what's coming out of this particular directive, because it's an overlay that we would have amongst state and local government, and I think it's a natural fit in looking at how prepared our jurisdictions are. Directive 9 is specifically for the agriculture and food system in their efforts to prepare against terrorist attacks and other natural disasters. And Directive 10 is related to health. And again, this gets back into my previous testimony about how critical some of our other partners are in state government and how it's important that we work together. Directive 13 looks for maritime security, and this directive has not been published yet, but it's just the next one on the horizon. Moving on to performance measurements, currently the only performance measurements within the Office of Homeland Security are those that have been established for Oregon Emergency Management and the Office of the State Fire Marshal. I have laid those out for you. They include evacuation planning, domestic preparedness planning, 911 systems, inspections within the Office of the State Fire Marshal, and each of the respective directors will be going into more detail their efforts that they have in support of meeting their performance measurements. On page 18, I talk a little bit here about the Homeland Security Presidential Directive 8 and my vision for developing the overarching performance measurement for the Office of Homeland Security and the efforts that we have. Affirmative action. The office is currently under the Oregon State Police's Affirmative Action Plan. We have not developed one specifically for the office, but upon passage of 2101 and the standing up of the Oregon Homeland Security Department, that will be a first priority, is developing our own affirmative action plan. Moving on to the next tab with Director's Office and Administration. Two policy option packages. Package is 151, transfers one position from the State Police to the Office of Homeland Security to provide administrative support to the director. And package 152 transfers two positions from State Police. Those were funded previously by the Office of the State Fire Marshal, and it also creates five new administrative positions. I want to point out to the committee that there is a special payment. It's a general fund payment that would go to the State Police for the services performed by the Office of Public Safety and Security. That is the five sworn positions who perform the necessary law enforcement functions for the office. And on the next pages, there's just two pie charts that outline the different funding for the Director's Office and the Office of Public Safety and Security. And Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any additional questions members may have.
Thank you very much, Director Stillwell. Are there questions or comments? And I'm going to acknowledge Senator Devlin, who needs to keep an appointment at the Capitol. Thank you for your participation today, Senator. This would also be a good point for me to note for the record that Senator Winters is still recuperating from her triple bypass surgery. She's doing very well. She's doing half days at the Capitol. We're so pleased that she's back, and we expect that she'll be back with this committee very soon. And thank you very much for your presentation.
You're very welcome.
Sir, would you like to tell us where you'd like us to go in the notebook, Director Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Murphy. For the record, I'm the Director of Office of Emergency Management for Oregon, and we'll start on page 39, which should be tabbed Oregon Emergency Management. And welcome to my home that I reside in. I'm glad every chance we can get to get elected or appointed officials over here to see what we've done. I want to try and cover and make this concise and in detail enough for you. Oregon Emergency Management's mission is found in ORS 401, and our primary role is to coordinate and maintain the governor's statewide emergency services system. And this is a system that is intended to facilitate and resource and collaborate and manage both pre-event and post-event activities during disasters, and that's terrorism, earthquakes, floods, fires, does not matter which. And we do that through mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery activities dealing with these disasters. And this mandate also is there that requires all state agencies having that responsibility for providing a service or during or following a disaster to do so in a planned and coordinated fashion with my office. And I think that has been a very big benefit to us as we've worked in emergency management, and especially coming into the Homeland Security issues. Most all of the state agencies, there's roughly about 22 that we normally work with, and our relationship with them has helped us continue that relationship in Homeland Security, because a lot of those issues deal with each one of those agencies. Oregon Emergency Management, as you'll see in your budget books there, is a small agency, but we have become very lean and mean and efficient. It's the only way we can operate. One of our missions is to really take advantage of every resource that's available to us, to partner with everybody we can at any level of government or the private sector, so that we can provide the safety and security of Oregon citizens and its visitors. Just briefly cover, we have four primary sections in my agency. First one is the Technology and Response Services section. Still here on page 39, you can see for those that were on the early part of the tour, we have the Oregon Emergency Response System, which is a 24/7 operation and really monitors all types of disasters, from oil spills to any type of disaster, and is co-located with the Criminal Justice Information Services, or traditionally the Law Enforcement Data Systems, which we showed you there earlier. They're there to provide information to the public and to the state government in times of any type of criticality, as again, during disasters or as part of an Amber Alert, as we explained when we walked through there, a key component along with the Oregon State Police in those type of things. They also have the responsibility of the 911 system and the public safety answering points. They also are there to provide communications interoperability solutions for voice and data and video services, which, as Director Stillwell said, is becoming and has become an ever-increasingly important subject. And I think for the record, I'm very concerned as we go through this budget cycle that we have a one person in this position. In fact, we're one deep in everything, that we may lose as part of our 10% reductions. And I learned from last legislative session, I had an earthquake and tsunami coordinator that I lost and had to refill out of a current vacancy. And I am glad I did that, considering the events of today's world. And I think it's... And I would hope that you consider how important to have a communications position is. It's a big job and a very important one. And finally, this section deals with in the management and in assistance with each county sheriff and their organization in conducting all ground, air, and marine services when it comes to search and rescue. Just briefly on the 911 program, I wanted to comment on a couple issues. We are just now in the process, hopefully, depending upon the telephone companies, in finishing up by the end of this year the enhanced 911 system, and that's really the location technology, primarily of your cell phones and the public safety answering points being able to locate you. As mentioned earlier, a big issue coming on the horizon is voice over the internet protocols. More and more people, as we saw many years ago with cell phones, are starting to use voice over the internet. A wonderful system, doesn't cost much, but does not interface with the current 911 system. So we have begun our research, our work, to try and start dealing with the service providers as technology and the public's demand for services start moving in that direction, and how we can integrate voice over the internet into the system, maintaining the requirements of the 911 system, which primarily and important to me and the citizens is you make a call and the public safety entities know where you're located on the ground. Which is the key to the 911 program. The 911 program, we continue our staff here that works on that to continue to provide the equipment upgrades, updated GIS mapping technology so that we have the best that we can possibly provide each one of the public safety answering points, and continue to work with them to make sure that they have an efficient operation in any way that we can support them. I just want to briefly recover a little bit on the Oregon Emergency Response System. This is a legislatively mandated system that we have. It's a very busy organization, and as I had mentioned as we took the tour earlier, that's where the disasters start in Oregon. We don't automatically bring everybody in, you know, to support a disaster. We start there, and then we elevate if it gets to be bigger and more demanding. Busy organization, as you can see in the notes, averaging over 3,000 calls per year that come in from just about anything you can imagine. But it is our key communications link. I kind of consider it my own personal state 911 system, where we can communicate with state agencies, city and county governments, and has become very important. As I mentioned on our tour earlier today, one of the phenomena that came out of the September 11th terrorist attacks is in my organization, we've become increasingly more of an information management up, down, sideways, left, right on any event that happens on the globe. Same thing happened with tsunamis. It was amazing how much information had to come in here and go out for people wanting to know what was going on with those type of events. So I think it's very important and a very important service that this group provides.
Director Murphy, I think this is probably a good place to stop for today.
Right.
And we can pick up on tomorrow with the plans and training services section. I want to take this opportunity to ask again if members have any comments or questions that you'd like to have followed up on the meeting tomorrow.
Thanks, Ms. Gore.
And if not, again, we are very grateful for all of the energy and planning that you put into preparing for this meeting today. Thank you very much. And I don't know how many of our colleagues have been over to take a look at this facility and what you're doing and how you're doing and you know what our members are doing to educate themselves about the needs here. But believe me when I say we will all take responsibility to share the word and help our colleagues understand that, that this is a critical arena. We all need to better understand your mission, and we also need to better understand what is going to be required in terms of funding at the state level through general fund to support your efforts.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the other thing I would like to say is we honor your service and all of those behind you and those that we can't see who are living and working in this building every day. We honor the service that you provide to all of Oregon, and again, we look forward to meeting with you on tomorrow and again getting a better understanding of your work. Thank you very much. And with that,
Madam Chair, I believe there are available. Ken, do you want to mention?
If, Madam Chair and members of the committee, if you have time, we do have the civil support team from the National Guard has some of their high-tech equipment and all their toys set up in the back corner of the building if you have time to take a quick tour.
We will make time.
I think that's wise.
I think it's important that you know that we have these at the governor and the state of Oregon's ability to take care of its citizens. The National Guard brings some great resources to the program, and I'd like you to see them.
Thank you very much, and we're adjourned.